This is Money Moves on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
What's going on, everybody? Happy Thursday as we welcome you in to Money Moves on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, Sirius XM Channel 158. He's Jonathan Von Tobel, Stormy Bonantoni here. We're live in downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino. Last night was fun. We've got a lot to get to over the course of the next 2 hours, including a couple of great guests. Ben Wilson is going to stop by the program, play-by-play broadcaster, betting analyst, give us the lowdown on the College World Series. We'll have Chris the Bear Felica get into a handful of things, but most notably, the Belmont Stakes is coming up this weekend and so much more. So, producer Brian Ortega, if you would, fire up the rundown. Let's discuss everything we've got on tap today.
It's time for the top headlines and topics of the day. This is the rundown.
It's like part of your Christmas to start us off here. The NBA Finals getting underway tonight, JVT.
Yeah, finally. Hockey fans experience this, the long layoff. We've been sitting around and waiting for it. So very excited to see what these two teams have to bring to the table. On the surface, looks like a non-competitive one, but crazier things have happened. So very much looking forward to what we're going to see later tonight in Oklahoma City. A very, I would say, fun series on the surface.
Okay, and that's I'm glad that you put it that way, because we are going to, in addition to break down the way that we see this series going, have the conversation of, should the Pacers be able to make this a fight and a longer series? How does that look for them? We have, by the way, also seen some movement in game one coming up today. This game opened with OKC favored by 8.5, 9, depending on where you looked. We're up to 10 at some places right now. So we'll get into all of that. Also, number two in our top three items on the rundown today, is that something you might be interested in? Our wonderful producer, Brian, has some bets he wants to see if he can talk us into today. Did you sneak peek the rundown? Have you taken a look at it yet?
No, actually, I did not, mainly because I was being lazy this morning, so I did not look at what Brian Ortega had. I wanted to be excited.
That'll
I wanted to be surprised.
Fun.
I wanted to be excited. You know,
I like when we do that sometimes. Yeah. Getting caught off guard kind of makes you a little more open-minded.
Ortega, last time when you weren't here, very sharp eye. One of the bets that he had pointed out in terms of would you be interested, moved from about 20-1 to 5-1 in the span of the time that we talked about it. It was Tigers to have the most wins in the month of June. So he had a very sharp eye, but very interested to see if he can do it again.
I may or may not have a Tigers bet today as well, speaking of which. And then last but certainly not least, where we're going to kick things off today on the show. The Stanley Cup Final got underway last night, and game one, boy, did it live up to the moment. Edmonton overcomes a 3-1 deficit in the second period to force overtime. They take game one at home 4-3. The over six comes home. And if you're Tomáš Nosek, you are sick to your stomach this morning for the bonehead move, flipping the puck out of play. No?
So there's a couple of things. I've been debating whether or not I wanted to pull the pin on a grenade and throw it, but I ultimately did not do it about that game yesterday. I would argue regulation was great. I thought overtime stunk. I thought that was a very
boring
overtime.
The icings were out of hand.
Yes, it was insane. And by the way, hockey fans, you don't have to be that sensitive. Like when I tweeted out yesterday, like, can we call another icing? This is great.
We were all
people
thinking
got
that.
See, people
I
got mad at me.
I don't think people should come in your comments and be mad at you for that, because we're all sitting on our couch. It's late at night too. People are getting tired. We're all thinking it.
Yeah, let's speed this up. And by the way, so I think the reason why I bring that up is, and I would ask you, you have a better eye than me. I thought expanding out, the reason why there were so many icings is Florida played like trash in that overtime. I don't want my guy, when I say, no, I'm not going to let that happen. My guy knows, like, look, that was a boneheaded penalty. You can't do that. But I thought they played terribly, Florida did, in multiple moments. I don't know who it was, but there was a moment where I think they caught Edmonton in a line change in overtime. Mm-hmm. So you had two blue liners that looked like pretty fatigued. And then this guy comes on the ice and gets called for offsides in a very key moment. You had that. You had the fact that they just couldn't get out of their own zone. I thought Florida played like absolute crap, and especially in that overtime. So, yeah, Nosek deserves a lot of the blame. But I'd ask you, I was surprised about the way Florida looked at times. They looked sloppy. They looked like they weren't into it. I was amazed to see how they were playing yesterday.
Yet they had a ton of zone time. And
sure,
so that's
right.
Kind of the thing, I think, for a lot of casual fans that would argue that I thought Florida had a really good time because they had so much time in their zone. And
sure,
Oilers were trying to just get the puck out of there as much as possible. But I agree. In overtime, I didn't think Florida had it. But throughout the course of the game, notably in the second period, you have to give Stuart Skinner a ton of credit.
Yep.
Because I thought Florida was dominant, at least from the eye test in the second period, the way they were getting shots on net, the way that they were getting in front of the crease too, lots of offensive zone time, yet they couldn't capitalize on any of them.
No, I would agree. I thought both goaltenders were great. Like, whoever was going to lose that game.
Despite it being a 4-3 final, yes, they played well.
Like, Bobrovsky, at some point, I'm watching, I'm like, dude, can we help my guy out here at some point? Especially in that overtime where it was really tilted. It reminded me of? It was Edmonton, L.A. I think it was the first or the second game. Whenever that game that went that overtime. And, like, I bet Edmonton in the overtime period at minus 160 because, dude, it was at one point they were out shooting them 21-5 for a stretch. They were just absolutely dominating them. And you were like, dude, this ice is tilted. Florida's got absolutely nothing. They're going to spit the bucket at some point here. And I think that they were just desperately trying to get to intermission again to maybe reset or whatever it was. And ultimately they get their sick power play goal. But I was, for a Florida team that I had watched at this postseason be dominant, to use the Thanos term, that looked inevitable, that looked like they were just like absolutely dog-walking every single opponent they faced, that was an amazing it was an amazing performance in the bad way. I was flabbergasted.
And give the Oilers credit again, too. Third periods and overtimes and comebacks, that's kind of been part of their calling card and the statements that they've made throughout the course of this postseason, for better or worse. And China, to further the point, Florida under Paul Maurice in the postseason, 29-0 when up after the second period, including 7-0 this postseason. So for Edmonton to get that win against this team that's so good at, as we had David Bearman on the show yesterday, quote Greg Wyshynski of ESPN, when they smell blood in the water, they attack. Florida didn't do that yesterday in game one. Edmonton is able to hold that home ice 4-3, win in overtime. Bearman, by the way, gave out the over 1.5 for the first period. That comes through for you. Good day for me personally in terms of the thought process for how we wanted to bet the series, where Connor McDavid, one of a handful of players who has 2 points in this game, I have him for most points in the series. Sam Bennett, who I like for most goals in the series, he and Leon Draisaitl both have 2 last night. The anytime goal that we gave out on Bennett yesterday at plus 280 comes home. So good start for a handful of those series long props that we have.
Yes. Did our guy get a point? Our guy did not get a point, did he?
He didn't.
Okay. He's 175 to 1. We got plenty of time.
It's only game one.
I think Leader has 2 points. Am I correct?
Yes. Yeah, so, and there's 6 guys that have 2 points so far. And Draisaitl and Bennett both have 2 goals.
All right, so I'll ask you this. Given the way that game played, I thought my takeaway was whatever went wrong for Florida was somewhat fixable because I thought it was a lack of effort and focus. Would you agree with that? Does your opinion on this series change at all after watching the way that Edmonton played?
I would say if you like Florida, which I know you do, and I do agree a lot of their issues yesterday were fixable, and they are still, I don't think anyone would disagree, on the surface, the better team when you kind of go line by line throughout the course of their roster, right? But now would be the time to bet them in my mind if you think that they're going to come back, because I could see a bounce back for Florida in game two. Plus 180 right now on the series price. Then they hold home ice. There is definitely a path, very much so. Like, that game could have gone either way, right? Like, they were up 3-1 in the second period.
For a moment, I don't know about you, but I was like, oh, okay, here, this is what I was talking about, right? Yes. Like, they're making Edmonton look like the team everybody was talking about going into the postseason. And then they just completely fell apart. That was amazing. And I guess, does Nosek have a history? I was reading, does he have a history of committing these stupid penalties?
A little bit, yeah. He did it in Vegas, too.
I was amazed by that. Yeah. I don't know. First off, you should be more, you should just know. How do you just flip that out of?
Especially against an Edmonton Oilers team that is so good on the power play when they want to be. Like, it's situational awareness. It's just brutal. Oilers go from minus 120 in the series price now to minus 210. I just mentioned Florida out to plus 180 right now. Could Edmonton go up 2-0 in the series? Absolutely. They're favored to do so in game two, minus 130, that price coming up for that second game. But if you are a Florida believer, I think your mind tells you that they need to steal one on the road here early, right?
Yeah. I mean, and look, like, to your overall point, I'm not too deterred about anything because this is game one on the road. So a series doesn't start. I don't know if you know this. A series doesn't start until a home team loses.
We love those cliches.
So if the home team never loses, then we go to game eight. So I will say that, like, I'm not too worried about this, and we'll see. Again, I believe that everything we saw from at Florida is fixable to an extent. But yeah, I'm down to clown still with my Florida Panthers.
Okay. We do.
By the way, can I ask you?
Sure.
Game two. Did you see anything price wise that would make you jump either way? They're minus 125, minus 130, 6.5, under minus 125.
I think that we're going to get a continuation of goal scoring. So my initial gut tells me we're going to keep seeing overs, but at 6.5, I don't like it. Like, I liked over 6 yesterday when I told you, if you can get the flat 6 before the game starts, I think that's the way to go because you have that opportunity to push.
Yeah.
But at 6.5, I don't know right now. You're getting plus 105 on it, so I like that more than the under where things sit right now.
It's been a little adjustment. I mean, Edmonton, some spots yesterday closed about like minus 115, something like that. And now some spots upwards of minus 130 for game two.
I do want to do this real quickly because next segment I want to deep dive into the NBA, but we do have first pitch for an MLB game that's going to start in about 10 minutes or less than 10 minutes. Diamondbacks and Braves. Braves lose again, by the way, yesterday. Love that. Chris Sale gives up one run in six innings, 10 strikeouts. Merrill Kelly's better. Today the market is backing the Braves, though, to bounce back. Atlanta opened minus 135. I see as high as minus 162 right now. Mm-hmm. Total in that one, 9. Brandon Pfaadt going for Arizona. Grant Holmes gets the start for Atlanta.
Well, I mean, they stink, the Braves, but Brandon Pfaadt stinks too. I don't know if you saw his last start where he got chased
smacked
before getting an out. Gave up 8 earned runs before getting an out against Washington. Now, it's a little unlucky. I think it was 8 hits that he allowed. That was all 8 batted balls. So, like, every single one reached. It was a little bit of bad luck there. But on the other end, so Grant Holmes is the epitome of a pitcher that I always struggle with. He's a dude that pitches to contact. I put something not so nice in my notes. But he gives up a ton of hard contact. He's gotten very lucky on balls in play. 230 batting average on balls in play against for Grant Holmes. But this is the way these guys pitch, right? They pitch to contact. They allow their defense to work. And I've always had an issue trying to read these kind of guys because on the surface, 378 ERA, but a 466 FIP would tell you that this is a dude that has some worse things coming for him, and yet they never really do because of the way that they pitch. Would lean toward Atlanta to an extent because I do think Pfaadt is much worse than Holmes. I think you could also get this thing over. I have a play on the other early game, but I did not do anything here.
I did end up playing the over, and I agree with you on the Braves side of things. Yeah. I lean Braves and over. Braves, middling offense, but to your point about Pfaadt, should be able to hit him. Diamondbacks, top 6 in the league in average, top 3 in slugging, 4th in OPS. I feel like they'll get theirs as well, given the numbers that you just gave to for Holmes. So put that all together. I bet the over 9, minus 112, so a little bit of juice on it. That said, we have a lot more to get to. As I mentioned, the NBA Finals getting underway with Game 1 tonight. We're going to deep dive on that. And hey, if the Rockies can sweep a series, anything can happen. We will give the argument, too, for how the Pacers might be able to compete with OKC, make this thing a long series. Could they make a little history? We'll see. We'll break it all down next on Money Moves.
Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
All right, we're back here on Money Moves, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Game 1 of the NBA Finals between the Indiana Pacers and OKC Thunder getting underway tonight. We have seen a little bit of movement on both the series price and the Game 1 numbers here. We've been talking all week about OKC being a $7 favorite. Not a big tweak, but down to minus 650 right now for the entire series set. OKC also up from an 8.5, 9-point favorite in game one out to 10. The total has gone up and down. Open JVT 229.5. I know you jumped on that over. We're currently sitting at a consensus 230, but got as high as 231 a handful of places over the last couple of days.
Yeah, and as I kept saying, I'm like, you're going to be able, there's going to be some buyback. There always is. So you figured this was going to happen. So we'll see how low it actually gets. But, I figured this was going to be part of what we're going to see market move wise. I guess it is correlated a little bit in that this is going under in terms of market movement and the Thunder are getting action. If they're going to cover a big number, the Thunder defense is really working hard. Mm-hmm. They're obviously shutting off the water for the Indiana Pacers. If they're going to blow them out, it's probably going to be a game that goes under the total because you're holding Indiana under 2. So it makes some sense that these are moving in the directions that they are for the most part.
Okay. For anybody who missed it the last couple of days, how are you playing game one, and what is your favorite series bet to get us kicked off here?
All right. So for just this game, again, over 229.5. So if it and when it, I think it pops up, I think you're perfectly fine. You're going to get there. Again, it's 230. So bet that thing over. That's what I did. As far as my favorite bet for the series, I would have to say it's Shai Gilgeous-Alexander 5-1 to lead the series in assists. I really do like that. Again, when you look at Oklahoma City defensively and you look at how good they are at cutting off assist opportunities, so there's a metric out there. It's assist to pass rate, which is essentially what percentage of your passes lead to assists. Denver was one of the best teams, actually the best team in the NBA, floating around like 10.4%, Stormy. Against Oklahoma City, that was down to under 8%, about like 7.3, 7.4. Memphis was a top team in that rating. They were also under 8%. Keep in mind that the last place team in the regular season was right at about 8.2. So it gives you an idea of how low that assist rate really is when you're talking about off of pure passes. And I think you're going to be able to do that here against Indiana. I don't think the assist opportunities are going to be as plentiful for the Indiana Pacers. And when the assist opportunities come, the Pacers are going to have to hit at a higher efficiency rate for Tyrese Halliburton to get those assists. So, in other words, I just think he's mispriced at the top. He should be favored. It's not like he shouldn't be. But minus 900 is really extreme. And so if that's really extreme, give me Shea at 5-1 to lead the series in assists.
And so I'll tell you, because right before we walked in to the studio today, I was like, you know, I think I'm going to tell you on that SGA assist, because the more research I was doing into the series and into these games, I really, really agreed with your thought process. Then I went to look at the odds board when we were in the last commercial break, and that $9 on Tyrese Halliburton is now $4 on DraftKings.
Oh,
that 5-1 is now plus 250 on Shea Gilgeous Alexander.
Okay.
So, and I'm going to shop around as we go to see if I can jump in on this and find a better number, but at the primary books, those are the numbers now, so that has shifted.
The where's Jalen? Yeah, so the other one, because
30-1
yeah,
now,
I took
Jalen
a long
Williams.
Shot at Jalen Williams at 66-1 as well.
That's more than cut in half.
So at least there is an agreement in the market with me that, hey, look, like the it's just a little too high. I think that that is ultimately what my thing was. He deserves to be the odds on favorite, but there is an opportunity that things are not going to be there as often. So makes some sense that we're starting to move there a little bit.
I did end up firing on OKC for game one, -9. And shop around, because yes, 10 is kind of the prevailing number and we're seeing more and more of them, but there are still 9.5 out there. I'm not sure if I see any more nines, but what do you anticipate this number getting to by the time we close? Do you think 10 is the right number?
I thought 9 was a little bit more fair. So if we're going to get to like 10.5, I mean, dare we say, do we get to 11? I don't know. It seems like there's going to be one-way traffic on Oklahoma City. I don't know if there's that many people willing to come out and bite on Indiana. We will see where it gets to, but I venture to guess that this is pretty much where we close. A couple of books at 9.5, a couple of books at 10.
I did put them in Moneyline Parlay for me as well, with a couple of baseball favorites that I like today. So I'll give
them. I got one too right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I did. So Kelly and Zach and I were texting, Kelly Bidlin and Zach Cohen, Harvard Handicappers, rest in peace, as we always do.
R.I.P.
So I put in a Sabalenka, Coco Gauff, Oklahoma City Thunder Moneyline Parlay. So right now, Coco Gauff is up, I don't know how to do this, what, four games to none and not hasn't won a set yet?
Yeah,
whatever it is. Either way, Gauff is off to a tremendous start. Sabalenka won her match, kicked Svitek's ass in that third set. So very, very live here with the parlay. But yes, I did the same thing.
I did a very chalky parlay with the Tigers and Yankees. So put that all together, it's around plus 148. So just shy of plus 150 price that on that one. But I feel pretty confident in the Thunder leg. That's why my favorite bet of the series was the Thunder to win all of their home games. Go undefeated at home, minus 120, that price there. Last half of this segment, let's get into the other side of this thing. Because so much of the argument all week has been not about if OKC wins this series, but when? Is it in five games? Because I know you like the gentleman's sweep angle. Is it a sweep? Is it in six? Not a lot of people have this thing go in seven to begin with. But if the Pacers were to be able to push in this series, if they were to be able to find a way to upset a massive favorite in the Oklahoma City Thunder, what is that path?
Well, I think it starts with OKC struggling on the road again. As we know, and it's you're going to hear it a lot, I put it in my write-up up at VSiN.com for some of the player props that I like. But the Thunder have been awful on the road. They have yet to cover a road game. They are 4-3 straight up on the road. They've been outscored by 6.2 points every 100 possessions on the road. That is something where, look, they are going to, if they're not going to win the series, they're going to continue to do that BS, which they should not do, but that is also going to continue. I think the other part of that equation is the others don't show up. Mm-hmm. While we all remember the game at Minnesota for Jalen Williams and the closeout game in which he had 19 points on 7-14 shooting, if you look at the previous contest, specifically on the road again, for a guy like Jalen Williams, and we'll get to Holmgren as well, in road playoff games before the last one in Minnesota for Jalen Williams, he was averaging 18 points, but on 40% shooting from the floor, 28% shooting from three-point range. Holmgren really didn't come along strong until later in the series against Minnesota as well. If you look at his home road splits in this postseason, you see a similar drop-off where you're talking about 15 points on 44% shooting and 26% from three. They struggle on the road. The role players don't show up in Holmgren and Jalen Williams, and it's a one-man band with Shea Gilgeous-Alexander trying to get this thing done. And I think that is where you're really getting to if they are going to lose this series. That has been the constant theme for them throughout this postseason for the most part. It's when they've been their most disappointing, and I think that's probably what it looks like if they lose this series.
So take advantage of being at home if you're Indiana. I think you probably also need to get Tyrese Halliburton to be a part of all of this because he has not had a ton of success against OKC the last couple years and this year, averaging 12 points per game against this team in four games. I know it's a smaller sample size, but still important. The three-point shooting, the number one postseason three-point shooting team, 40%.
Yep.
I also put While the Thunder have been lauded as having the best record in the NBA since the calendar flipped to 2025, the Pacers have the second best mark. So it's not like they're a bunch of schlubs that are coming out here either. And I also put on my list of things they need to do is the clutch time magic kind of needs to continue for them, right? And I know that the Thunder have allowed, what, opponents to shoot 36% in clutch time this postseason, the best mark of any team, but the Pacers have also been historically great late in these games. We've given the stat a handful of times since 1998. Teams are 4-1, 4-1,665 in the playoffs when trailing by seven or more in the final minute of a game. Three of those are by this Pacers team this postseason. Seven clutch wins are the most of any team in the NBA this year. So a lot of things need to go right, but they have shown that they could do them as well this playoff. So I don't think that they should be discounted as like, this is an automatic sweep. Sure. OKC is going to handle this thing in four and it's over.
So I'll add one more thing to the ledger for the Indiana path to victory before we get to.
That said, I do have OKC winning.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And like, not to crap at Indiana.
That's the worst part of it.
But the other part of this too is 3-point shooting just overall for Oklahoma City. They were 38% 3-point shooting team in the regular season. They're shooting 33% from three in the postseason. The shooting has kind of dried up for whatever reason that is. A lot of it has to do with some skew in the road games. Like, they've been abysmal in the road games. They've been better at home, but they're still only shooting 36% from three at home. But having said that, going back to what we talked about, this hasn't been mentioned as much, but everything you're talking about with Indiana is part of the reason why I do kind of point to this being unsustainable to an extent. Mm-hmm. Clutch time can be largely random. We are talking about the last 5 minutes of a game with five or fewer minutes left to go. And the fact that clutch time has consistently gone in your direction, both in this postseason and, by the way, in the regular season, as you talked about too, 7-1 here in clutch time in the postseason. They were also one of the best teams in clutch time in the NBA in the regular season. They outscored opponents by 20.9 points per 100 possessions in clutch time in the regular season. There was a great stat. I'm ballparking this stat, but again, going back to the unsustainability thing. Tyrese Halliburton, regular season and postseason, game tying, game winning shots, 14 of 16, 13 of them are jump shots in terms of the attempts. Like, that's insane in terms of being able to sink those in those moments, largely somewhat random. Now, there is a skill set in being able to meet those moments, so maybe he's just going to be able to do that. Just look at this run, and every single one of these series blows by Giannis to get a game-winning layup, hits a game-winner on a rebound off of a missed free throw against Cleveland, hits a game-tying shot against New York. It is wild that those things have constantly gone in their direction. And we should also note, I think, one of the more important metrics. While they have not given up a ton of uncontested looks, Stormy, their playoff opponents are shooting 33% from beyond the arc on uncontested three-point shots. That is generally pretty lucky when you're talking about being able to consistently pull that off. And I will be very curious to see if that continues as well.
Reminder, we have written previews on the website of the NBA Finals Game 1 and beyond from JVT, as well as Zach Cohen and Dan Karpuk. Also, lots more up on the website for the NHL postseason, the College World Series Super Regionals, which are getting underway tomorrow. Aaron Moore's got a preview. Matt Grissom has his College World Series betting guide as well. And we're going to actually talk a little College World Series coming up next when Ben Wilson joins the program. Tennessee, Arkansas, that's the headline series, why he likes this bet in Game 1 and more next. But remember, vsin.com/subscribe. That's how you get access to everything we have on the site each and every day. We'll be right back.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
In the Sports Betting Network, Money Moves, and FYI, in case you didn't know, Money Moves is hitting the road for the College World Series in Omaha. We're going to go live from Rocco's, home of the iconic Jell-O Shot Challenge, from June 12th through the 14th. Our show, as well as Follow the Money and our guy Jensen Lewis, all out there live from Omaha. We're going to bring you the sights, sounds, and best bets from the tournament. So if you're in the neighborhood, make sure you stop by and say hello. But before we get out there to Rocco's and Charles Schwab Field, the road to Omaha continues with the Super Regionals this weekend. 16 teams, 8 host sites, best of 3 series, first games getting underway tomorrow. And to help us break it all down, excited to welcome in our good buddy Ben Wilson on the Progressive guest line, play-by-play broadcaster, betting analyst, called a ton of college baseball, conference tournament action, and more. And before we get into some of these game ones, Ben, big picture, I am curious, how much did you expect or how surprised were you to see some of these big dogs exiting the tournament so early? And is that a trend you think could continue into this weekend?
Yeah, for one, Stormy, I wasn't shocked just that there were upsets in general. It was more the scale to which it happened. I mean, you were talking basically half of the number one seeds didn't even get into their regional finals with that optimal opportunity to win, where you're 2-0 and you feel really good about your chances. Even some of the ones who did win, they went to decisive game sevens. They had to win four straight, which historically has only happened about 7% of the time, which kind of tells you just how hard it is to lose your first game in that regional setting, then come all the way back to win. I definitely believe it is something that will continue, simply because as much as the transfer portal has taken over other sports like the college football and especially the college basketball, as we saw, the amount of depth of talent at the D1 level for baseball is so great that you have a lot of mid-major schools. I mean, the Big West had an at-large that was ranked in the top 25 this year in UC Irvine. Like, that's the sort of thing that I don't see just vanishing, even though we're kind of in this now more concentrated, the rich get richer sort of era in college sports in general. But baseball seems to be that one sport because of the depth and the, you know, just the overall pool here of really, really talented prospects. This will continue. And also it's because of the randomness of college baseball, right? Like, how often are you going to get Murray State 30-1 to win the regional? Go to supers. Well, they're not the first team who's been a 4 seed to do this. Like, this isn't some 16 seed, UMBC story. Like, it is definitely something that has happened before, and I'm sure will continue to happen again.
So when we talked to you last week, we talked about generally, and you can correct any details here, but these teams that are smaller schools, Ben, right, don't have the overall depth, so the pitching gets a little wonky as you get a little bit later into these regionals. These all seem to be teams that are on pretty similar levels with one another outside of some outliers. So how does that change in terms of how we approach pitching? What are these bullpens like? What are some of the intricacies of these sets that we're going to see here that change from the regionals?
Yeah, for the most part, it'll come down to, you know, how effective are the Friday guys. And I think what we saw in regionals, JVT, that is a little bit different than how the super regionals play out. About half the teams, maybe a little under half, decided to actually just go bullpen games in game one. It wasn't just a strict, all right, we're going to throw our best guy, you're throwing your best guy in the first game of regionals. Let's see how it plays out. I think a lot of teams have gotten more, you know, analytically sound, and they've tried to really play the matchups, really tried to save their best arms for last in some senses. I don't see that being the case as much now because it's best of three. You have all these teams have had 3 weekend starters all season. So in the case of, you know, in Arkansas and Tennessee, which we'll talk about in a second, that's on paper by far the best matchup we have. You have 2 of the 3 favorites still left here. I mean, you're going to see the Friday guys go up against each other because to throw your best pitcher when you know the opponent, and you could play 2 games, you could play 3, as opposed to the regionals, where you might have to play 5 games if you lose the first and go through that loser's bracket. It really does change the dynamic. So to me, it makes it a little simpler as far as the specific pitching handicap and why I do like a lot of the game one spots, just because you know you're getting 1 versus 1 as opposed to maybe a 1 versus a bullpen game or a 2 versus a 1, something like that.
Betting analyst and play-by-play man Ben Wilson joining us here on the Progressive Guest Line. And to your point about the top of the odds board right now, LSU is your favorite at plus 310. But Arkansas and Tennessee, who are going head-to-head this weekend, Arkansas plus 370, Tennessee plus 650 in their series. You see the Hogs as a minus 130 favorite. And as far as game one goes, minus 175, Tennessee available plus 135. The total in that one, 10.5. Any angles bettors should be aware of in that series opening game?
Sure, yeah, to open the series, I would say, Stormy, the under to me, this is a great clash of amazing offenses, absolutely elite major league level pitching, and we've got a ton of prospects on both sides who will be, you know, not only drafted, but drafted really high coming up in the draft in short time. I like the angle of the pitching truncating that really good offense, and for the fact that you are getting your aces here for Arkansas, and I've gotten to see both these teams in person. They certainly look the part when you watch them. They're built very much like a professional type club. Zach Root has been incredible and very consistent all year for Arkansas. Doesn't maybe have the notoriety or, you know, the flashiness, but he's just a really consistent, grinded out guy. The question for Tennessee is, you know, Liam Doyle, they just used twice in the regional series. He was the SEC pitcher of the year. Dude just, you know, has nasty stuff. It just jumps off when you watch him in person too. Great life on his fastball. But he struggled a little bit down the home stretch of the regular season. His last 2 starts gave up 10 runs combined and didn't go very deep in either of them. One of those starts was against Arkansas. So I like him with how good he looked in the regionals, really was the Tennessee stud. They had to go the distance and went 7 full games in the regional. I like him to bounce back in a big way. I believe this has all the feel, I mean, of a College World Series actual championship, and we're getting it in a super region. So you're getting 10.5 largely because there's a lot of respect for the bats and also because of how the regionals played, where we had a lot of overs a lot of that was because of these bullpens that got worn out and the aluminum bat nature of college baseball. So I'll go under 10.5 here. Going to ride two of the best pitchers in the game who get to square off. I expect a really tight, low-scoring 3-2, 4-3 kind of game here for game one.
Is there a team that you like to win their regional?
I love Louisville here, and you got to lay about $1.60. The Cardinals were a team for me. I actually saw them opening day, and they upset Texas on a walk-off, and that really just precipitated a kind of out-of-nowhere season for Dan McDonald, who's been there forever at Louisville. I hadn't made the postseason for the previous couple years. There weren't much expectations around them, but their ace, Patrick Forbes, who can do a Rubik's Cube in like 25 seconds. I know that's right up Stormy's alley. But guy's got touches upper 90s with the fastball, has great secondary stuff as well. And Miami won this kind of super chaotic Hattiesburg regional. Southern Miss was the weakest seed who got to host a regional as the 16 seed. And Miami, they obviously were impressive to get there, but I thought that was a pretty average regional as far as actual, the win equity of teams to actually make it to Omaha here. So a -160, as much as you're going from Louisville, who was 6-7-1 to win their regional against Vanderbilt, and now you're laying a price, I believe that's totally warranted. I would make that more like -190, -200 there.
Okay, you mentioned Murray State earlier. They're kind of the lone Cinderella that's remaining. But as you go through these different regionals, is there an underdog that you think could be plucky and really make a little bit of a run?
Well, it's funny you say Murray State. +290, I mean, it's not like – and they're not the biggest underdog. It kind of tells you the dominance of LSU here as you take a look at some of these odds. I mean, there have been so many cases, Stormy, of four seeds. I think back to Fresno State of many years past for the Mountain West fans out there like Stormy. Yeah. We've had Oral Roberts as a four seed. These teams generally I know JBT's putting his hands up. These teams generally don't just go away quietly.
Yeah.
I know. But, look, it's usually not a situation where if you're a four seed, it's like the – it's the UMBC, you win round one, and you just get killed once you get past that. The thing that helps Murray State, and why I'd bet on them early in this series and look at like a game one spot for the here for the Racers. They had the best defense by far in the Missouri Valley Conference this year, and while the pitching is suspect, they won a bunch of slugfests essentially. But the defense saved them in a lot of spots. They're able to help out their pitching staff from that side of it, which you don't awfully see with like the plucky underdog team. So I'd taken Murray State. That was one of the few bets that worked out for me in round one in the run line sense, since they were getting such a big number against Ole Miss in their regional. I see the same thing playing out here for this, at least the first game against Duke. They'll be able to score runs, Murray State. So whether you go money line, you're getting around 3-1. Whether you go run lines can be really good for these dogs, since a lot of times you're getting 2.5 or 3.5, unlike the situation in MLB, how that normally plays out. I do think the Racers are live here to keep it really tight. I'm not sure if they'll actually get over the hump and make it to Omaha, but by no means should you sleep on what Murray State can do.
Is there, as we're looking at some of these teams, one of the teams that stuck out to me is a team like North Carolina that I think can make some noise overall. Is that something that could happen as this has become a little bit weaker in the last 45 seconds?
Yeah, I mean, 7-1, I think it's pretty good value here, right? Fourth on the odds board, especially one of the two teams in front of them will get knocked out. If you're handicapping just the depth of pitching and quality depth, I mean, North Carolina probably has to be, right there with what Arkansas has been able to do this year. So I don't, and given the matchup here, West Virginia, I was very high on Clemson in the regional West Virginia came out of. They just kind of smashed and grabbed their way to, they committed five errors in the last game and they still won the regional anyway. I don't know that they get away with that sort of level against a team like UNC. So it would be more of an add on the future standpoint for me if I didn't have anything invested, just to get that out there, because I do see that number dropping before we get to Omaha.
Ben, keep up the good work. Great stuff, buddy. Appreciate you.
Love you, Ben.
Absolutely, you guys. Take care.
Love.
Ben Wilson, everybody. North Carolina, by the way, laying 315 in game one against Arizona. That total 10. And if you like Murray State, that +2.5 on the run line, +105 in game one against Duke. We'll be right back with, is this something you might be interested in? Don't go anywhere.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
horse racing's Triple Crown wraps up on Saturday with the Belmont Stakes up at Saratoga. Get in on the action with our friends over at First Bet and play in the first free First Bet and VSiN Belmont Stakes Pick'em Challenge. Enter your picks for Saturday's top races to win great prizes up to $500 included in a wagering voucher from First Bet. Head over to VSiN.com/Belmont to play. That's VSiN.com/Belmont. VSiN and First Bet getting together.
What if I told you I have a bet nobody's thought of yet? Is that something you'd be interested in?
That voice just cracks me up. Okay, time for Is This Something You Might Be Interested In? Our wonderful producer, Brian Ortega, has come up with a handful of bets that he really, really likes and is trying to pitch them to us as a salesman for the show, JBT. So starting with tonight's game one in the NBA Finals, Brian says, I'm looking at the race two markets, and I like Tyrese Halliburton to be the first to make 2 3-pointers tonight. Plus 450 is the price, JBT. Is that something you might be interested in?
Pretty much no, but I will say I like the line of thinking. I mean, just the randomness of being the first to make 2 3-pointers, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Is kind of odd, but I will say this. I think that there is a reality where Halliburton does hit or attempt quite a few threes, only because I think OKC is very good at cutting off the rim, cutting off the paint, not allowing drives to the basket. And there's a reality in which he is focused more solely on trying to hit perimeter jump shots, because much like all these other guys that have played Oklahoma City, you cannot get inside. And you can't really drive and kick to open shooters. So there might be this, especially early, this sort of pattern from Halliburton where he's attempting more threes than usual, maybe he hits them. So maybe rather go over for the game as opposed to the first to get to two, right? That was it?
Yeah, the line of thinking to me makes a lot of sense. I just am on fade Halliburton this series. Like, I'm team fade Tyrese Halliburton. I like him under 17.5 points today. I like him under 2.5 threes.
Bet at your own risk.
I haven't bet them, but I'm just like, where my mind goes as I was looking through the prop markets was lending more toward the under, but we'll see. And we're getting a little bit more Pacers love here with prompt number 2 from Brian Ortega. Says, I think the Pacers are massively disrespected in the market this series. They've surprised everyone throughout the playoffs. They're going to win at least one game at home and steal one in OKC. Thunder win the series, but the exact outcome will be 4-2. Another plus 450 price. Is that something you'd be interested in?
So I like the Pacers are getting absolutely disrespected. They're still going to lose this series. No, as somebody who bet this in 5 and thinks this is only going 5. Now, I will say, Kelly asked me a good question yesterday when I was on with the numbers game, which was, as somebody who thinks it's 5, is it more likely it goes to 4 or more likely it goes to 6? I will say, if given those two options, I'd say more likely it goes to 6, given the Thunder's road struggles. But I'm somebody who has bet this and is tied into quite a few outcomes for this series to be 5 games only, so I will say no.
It could soon. Yeah, no, I don't believe in it. And I know earlier this hour we made the whole argument for what it would take for the Pacers to push this thing, to make it a long series or potentially win the set. And even as I was hyping them up, I still said afterwards, but I have OKC handling business, and I think that they probably do it sooner rather than later. I don't think it's impossible. I like the plus 450 price, especially if you're trying to find a way to get a better number than minus 650 for OKC to win it all and minus 140 for them laying 2.5 games. If you do an exact outcome, maybe that is a better way to play it. Possible bet number 3. We're going to a little college football here because last week at SEC spring meetings, Greg Sankey, SEC coaches, ADs, they were all voicing support for college football playoff expansion from the 12-team format to 16, particularly the one that gives the SEC 4 automatic qualifiers. Ryan Day with the Big Ten doing similar things has come out and said, yeah, I think our conference should get a piece of that pie as well. We're in the Big Ten, quote, we have 18 teams that are some of the best in the country. I feel like we deserve at least 4 automatic qualifiers. Big Ten getting 4 automatic qualifiers in a 16-team college football playoff model. Is that something you would be interested in?
No, not at all. Stop. You guys get enough already as it is. The problem is when you go by pure rankings as well, though, too, then either way, the little guy's getting screwed here.
Yeah.
No matter what's going to happen. It's not about college athletics anymore. It's about making these universities and these programs as much money as possible. But this whole idea of deserving things because you went and bought a bunch of these programs to come and join your conference, I am fully against. So, no, I'm not interested in this at all.
This is like, I understand the rationale and I understand the agenda that all of these coaches have, right? And the more that you're in the college football playoff, the more you're going to get those players to your program. They're just trying to hype themselves up, sure. But like, it also feels like a participation trophy. Feels like somebody who doesn't want to compete and just cares about job protection and those types of things. So, no, I don't like it. That is not the format that I would be in favor of when all is said and done. Top Big Ten odds to make the college football playoff right now, Ohio State, Penn State, Oregon, all odds on numbers, minus 500 and minus 300 respectively there. Yeesh. So already, you don't even need the AQs according to the odds. You're going to be there.
Right, of course. But I will just say that, I mean, Penn State's up there. Are we going to do this again with Penn State? The overall belief that the Nittany Lions are going to pull this thing off, I'm very interested in every single year.
We're going to have a little bit of FPI conversation coming up later. Penn State's pretty high up there on the odds board. They're fourth in the nation to win a national championship this year, bringing Drew Aller back. They got the two-headed monster at running back. You're not a believer?
No. I mean, we all watched. Again, like we watched what happened in that. We watched what happened in the playoff. The mind-numbing decisions from a play-calling and decision-making standpoint from both Aller and Franklin. I can't do it. I can't do it anymore.
Okay. Let's get to former college football. Now in the NFL, Travis Hunter. So I'm sure you all have seen it out there. The OTA highlights already making splashes, big interceptions. You've got the beautiful camera work from the social media people out there. So Brian says the two-way phenom for Colorado is expected to have a more featured role on defense than the offensive side of the ball. He wants to bet Travis Hunter is defensive rookie of the year. Should everyone have him in the portfolio? Is that something you'd be interested in? 12-1.
I'm going to say no again, only because we know what he's going to play. Like, is he going to play enough snaps to actually get defensive rookie of the year that you're going to bet, especially at the odds at 12-1? Like, we don't know what exactly his role is going to be. If he's just playing mostly wide receiver and getting some packages at, like, nickel corner, then that's not really worth it. He's not really going to do enough to win Defensive Player of the Year, because then you're going to have to trust that these voters are watching his film intricately enough to understand how well he is doing on the few defensive snaps that he's getting.
So would you lean more toward him being an offensive rookie of the year? I personally wouldn't bet him in either market.
Right. I just don't know what he's going to be.
Yes.
I just don't know what they're going to do. And I look, I'm sorry, but he is a very talented player. This is not meant as slight to him. It is easy to play the snap load that he did in college football. And I shouldn't say easy, but when you talk about the change from college football to the NFL, yes, that it's such a different animal. And I just don't know if this is really going to work.
The only thing I would say, because I'm in complete agreement with you, what he does on one side of the ball or the other, that's obviously going to bleed into and take away from the snaps on the other side and his ability to execute on the other side of the ball. But if he, let's say, does have a really good defensive year at corner, but it's not, I don't know what the right way to phrase this, but like someone else has a better year, right? Mm-hmm. Does he get any benefit of the doubt, even though his numbers aren't as good defensively, because he is a two-way player and they want to reward that in some way?
I mean, maybe. What do you give to him then? Right?
Like, if there was a rookie of the year period award, I think that would make a ton of sense. But since there's not, that's why I'm saying I wouldn't bet him in either market.
And especially,
personally.
I mean, again, you're going to have to go up against quarterbacks for the rookie of the year award, or for the offensive rookie of the year award. You have to go up against edge rushers who have splashier stats and the defensive rookie of the year award who are going to play more snaps at their respective positions. So especially the number, I just don't think it's really worth it.
FYI, as we're monitoring some baseball here, Braves up 1-0 over the Diamondbacks here early. We do have a baseball bet from Brian that he is pitching here. Yankees Guardians going head-to-head today. Max Fried in action with an ERA of 1.97, fifth in the bigs. Says, I like him to give up fewer than 1.5 earned runs today. You can bet that at plus 105. Is that something you'd be interested in?
I think that makes sense. Freed's been absolutely untouchable. And whether it's that or if you wanted to go in a different direction with the total getting under, but these are what we call these low-hanging fruit spots, right?
Mm-hmm.
Freed's been absolutely unreal. I don't see why he wouldn't be able to come out again and do what he's been able to do. So, again, Max Fried to allow under 1.5 earned runs, correct? That is it. I think that is something I would be interested in.
I do like the Yankees today. That's a game that we're going to preview actually coming up in the next segment. One of a handful on deck today. This one isn't in the rundown, but just my own curiosity, because we've talked a lot about these different series markets in the NBA Finals. Could you be interested in a Jalen Williams most points in the NBA Finals? I mean, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is priced out of his mind, but if you're to take a shot on someone else, would Jalen Williams at 25-1 or better be worthwhile?
I did add somebody in this market.
Ooh.
And it is a Thunder player. It is not Jalen Williams.
Okay, just finish it. Give the rationale.
It's not crazy. It is crazy in terms of the odds. I bet Chet Holmgren 125-1 to lead the series in scoring. I think this is going to be a matchup where he's going to be able to take advantage of Miles Turner. Turner's a little bit slow, doesn't really get out to contest threes very well. He's going to be able, I think, take advantage of Turner when you're talking about the way he plays defensively. Zach had a great point, Zach Cohen, our senior editor, where he was talking about him averaging 20-plus points per game in this series. And if that's going to be true, I think there's a bigger reality than what plus 125 or 125-1 would tell you that he can actually lead this series in scoring. He has one big blow-up game, and it could happen. So I did actually add something, but it was Chet Holmgren.
Interesting. Okay. Plus, you know, playing cleanup on the offensive boards. Just keep going with the rebounding edge that we expect OKC to have in this one, too. All right. Chet Holmgren it is, which, as you mentioned, your buddy Zach Cohen. Articles up from JVT and Zach on VSiN.com right now, breaking down the series in its entirety.
We have big NFL news.
Ooh, now that's a tease as we reset coming up in a moment for hour two on Money Moves. We'll hit that news, breakdown of the MLB slate. We've got Belmont conversation with Chris the Bear Felica and more. Don't miss it. Stay tuned right here on Money Moves.